Well, welcome along to Win Conversation. Scotty Stevenson with you here. And before the short ball returns to Rugby Pass, we thought we'd take our time over the summer break to chat to a few of the people who make up New Zealand's national game. Today, we're joined by player agent and former All Black Craig Postie-Innes. And a very good afternoon to you, Postie. How's things, mate?
Yeah, Scotty, I'm good, mate. I've had a couple of nice weeks on the beach and getting a bit of a tan, but she's back in action now.
Postie, I want to take you back during this conversation to your days as a player, both in union and rugby league. But, you know, let's start with where you find yourself today. Just describe for us your business and your role within it.
Yeah, so I guess coming out of my own career, you know, rugby union hadn't been professional for very long. I think 96 was the first year, and you know, I played a few years as a professional playing rugby league. So I guess I got to see a good, you know, have a good look at how all the moving parts actually work, and of course agents and you know, I guess with a group of my friends playing, kind of seeing how the different agents worked, and you know, there were good ones and bad ones, and then I guess coming back into rugby union and just wondering, you know, what I wanted to do with you know, with the career after rugby. You know, it was something that I just kind of gravitated towards, and you know, it wasn't long after I'd finished I hooked up with Bruce Sharrock, who's still my business partner today, and we started a business pretty much based on, you know, when we sat down and worked it out, pretty much what we thought were the necessities for a player as far as management, and really, I guess the whole philosophy was about just getting the right people and surrounding yourself, you know. So you can get on, you can play the game without having to worry what's going on off the field with your contracts. You know, advice, getting the right people involved to give advice as far as, you know, what you're doing financially with that money that you're earning, and you know, all the things that kind of go into it. So that was the basis of it, and we started off just the two of us. I guess over time it all evolves, and you know, your good experience, bad experience. And we kind of found that we thought we had things going pretty well here in New Zealand, but you know, for sending players offshore, you know, it's vital that you have the right people involved, you know, to meet the guys on the other side. So, you know, it took a while for us to kind of find those people, and what we were able to do was create a bigger business with them, which is kind of growing into the whole Esportif thing that we've got going now, which basically, I guess, you know, we run it as a, you know, we have a chairman that sits at the top, a board of six guys, you know, made up from the different countries that that are represented, and yeah, mate, I guess, you know, we've created this really to make sure that across the globe, when we're sending our people away, you know, their players and their families, they're getting looked after properly, and you know, they've got the same kind of values, same kind of ideas on how things should be working, no matter where they are. So that's kind of been the basis of it. And so far, it's gone pretty well.
Yeah, I want to come back and discuss that entire market a little bit later in our chat today, Postie. But I want to take you back, mate. Not too far back, but back to the 14th of October, 1989, in Cardiff, and your very first game for the All Blacks. Do you still look back at that time of your life and marvel at that experience of becoming an All Black and playing with the calibre of players you did?
Yes, and I mean, yeah, certainly. It's I mean, I was just one of those kids that grew up playing rugby pretty much every night with my brothers and my mates. You know, on the road on the back lawn. You know, one team was always South Africa, one team was always the All Blacks or Wales, or you know, so the big scrap was, to begin with, was, you know, who would be the All Blacks, and so I mean, it was always going to be it was always a dream to play for the All Blacks, and then to be able to, I guess, hit my first start running out on the Cardiff Farms, which, you know, I guess it's still got the same kind of mythical kind of, you know, value kind of around that whole, you know, these big sports grounds around the world. But for me, certainly Cardiff Arms was one that, you know, you got up at 3 o'clock in the morning, waking up by your parents to watch the All Blacks playing Cardiff, yeah. And then, you know, and then the Welsh team, you know, a couple of weeks later, and so it was something that was very special, and to be able to play my first test there was just magic, and you know, something I'll never forget, that's for sure.
I want to take you through the All Blacks lineup that day for your first test, which was only a couple of weeks later at the same ground. Steve McDowell, Sean Fitzpatrick, Richard Lowe, Murray Pearce, Gary Whitten, Andy Earle, Mike Brewer, Buck Shelford, Graham Bishop, Grant Fox, Terry Wright, Johnny Schuster, Joe Stanley, John Gallagher, and yourself. That is a lineup, Postie. Wow.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was just a fantastic, that year was an amazing team to be part of. You know, really, really, you know, experienced, strong leadership. You know, Buck Shelford is your captain, Griz Wiley is the coach. And a great bunch of guys that have been around a long time. And then, you know, the likes of your buying your Tui Gabalas and your John Tillers, yeah, and Matt Ridges, all guys that, you know, we'd come through the grades together from pretty much under 16s. You know, Walter and I played Roller Mills together. So yeah, to go on that tour, you know, as a group of young guys surrounded by that type of experience, was an amazing, you know, few weeks, and the rugby was great, you know. And a forward pack, they were just kind of, you know, these rolling malls going, buddy, you know, 50 metres and a back line that could finish it off. It was great. Really enjoyable.
20 years old on test debut as well, and you scored 2 tries in that game, playing on the wing.
Yeah, mate, yeah. Again, you know, just really something really special. I guess, you know, to actually be out there is one thing. To score a couple of tries was fantastic. And yeah, my dad tells a story. Mum and dad sat in the stands, and Mum actually didn't see it. The first try came along pretty quickly, and Mum didn't see it. She still had tears in her eyes after watching the national anthem. So it was great just having them in the stand as well for the occasion, and just fantastic. So one thing, mate, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of games, you know, and it's quite a few years have passed, of course, and you know, a lot of them kind of fade into the distance, but certainly that day in particular will always be with us, you know.
Yeah, I know you had a lot of experience with so many of that team. The backbone of that team was Auckland-based, Craig, and you'd come through the Ponsonby system as so many of the All Blacks of that era had. So I guess it wasn't a strange feeling for you to play alongside these guys, even though it was a guaranteed another step up.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, again, lucky, I guess, to have come into an Auckland team which you know, I mean, it was just chocker full of All Blacks and experience. And so, you know, the good thing about those types of teams, you just worry about what you're doing. You don't have to worry about anything else. And, you know, off the field, they made you they made you confident in your ability, and you know, you kind of had this feeling, well, if I'm here, I must go okay, because I'm surrounded by some pretty good footballers. So you know, it was just I was just very lucky, I guess, and you know, to play in that Auckland team at that time, it was so dominant New Zealand rugby, and it was just all really good learning and kind of fast tracked me, I guess.
Yeah. The rugby career, I think, and most of the guys of your generation would attest to this, and in all my conversations with them, it's been the same. It feels like a lifetime when you're in it, but when you look back, when you have some distance, I guess it feels like the blink of an eye. Did you feel that throughout your playing career, whether it be at super level, provincial level, or All Black level, Postie, that you tried to enjoy it, make the most of it while you had the opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you're younger, it's you know, it's like, mate, I mean, you're bulletproof, and it's going to go on forever and ever. That's one thing we find, you know, we're dealing with these young guys that we deal with today. It's you know, it's hard to imagine it's ever going to end. But I guess you start to kind of get into your kind of mid to late 20s, and you know, you can start to see that you know, okay, well, maybe this is going to come to an end one day. So you know, I guess you're in the moment for a big part of it, and it's not really until later on that you start to kind of think, well, Yeah, okay. Do I need to start thinking about what else I'm going to do within the game? And by that I mean, you know, am I going to stick around in New Zealand, or am I going to head off overseas to have an experience over there? So that's kind of, I guess, when those decisions start to get made. Mm.
I want to focus a little bit on 1991, because we are in a World Cup year, as everyone knows, and you had your World Cup experience in 1991. And I guess there's a feeling from a lot of the guys who were part of that team that the preparation just wasn't quite there. The mindset from the All Blacks during that tournament wasn't quite there. We know what happened at Lansdowne Road in that semi-final. But what were your reflections or experiences of that Rugby World Cup, still as a very young player in that team?
Yeah, I guess if 89 was a great year to be part of that whole environment, 91 was probably the opposite in a lot of ways. Mm. We'd gone to Argentina earlier on and had a reasonably good tour over there. Came back and we struggled a little bit with the Australia. Well, we lost one of the tests over there. Yep. Only just beat them at Eden Park. But it was just like, just things weren't gelling, things weren't clicking, and then of course there's the unrest just around the coaching, and Hardy was brought in to coach alongside Grizz, and we all knew that was going to be a bloody disaster. It was just never going to work, but both fantastic coaches in their own right, but as playing combinations, you think coaching's no different. We went off to that World Cup and it just wasn't right, mate. I think there were a few that were starting to kind of come down the other side of the hill and a few players that weren't there through injury, and the feeling just wasn't what it should be. And we paid the price at the end of the day. I don't think we, at any stage during the tournament, we really kind of clicked. We beat the English in the first game, and a lot of the focus for the World Cup, I think, was kind of on that game.
Yeah.
And then of course, by the time we got to the Australians, they had us pretty well sussed, and they were a good team. And I don't think anyone can really take away from that either, that the Australians really had their game together that year, and I think they were deserved winners in the end.
Yeah, they were a sensational side for sure. And it's funny, you look back through that tournament for the All Blacks as well, and it's the nature of Rugby World Cups. You can't help the draw, but England was that test match that you'd focused on, as you mentioned, but then it was USA and Italy and Canada, all teams that you would have been favoured to put away by some distance, but they were closer games than everyone expected. The Canadian game, the Italian game in particular. I remember watching that tournament and thinking to myself, there was a real struggle in that team. You could sense it, that the effort was there, but things just would not go to plan, and the frustration seemed to grow.
Yeah, well, that's right, I don't know, we never really kind of settled on any particular, looking back now, it was like we're kind of struggling to just to find that spark find that game plan that was, that was going to kind of see us through. But it's a funny thing, man, and it's really, you look at any of these World Cups, and I mean, they can turn on a dime. Mm. And even that tournament, the Aussies were lucky to survive the quarterfinal against the Irish. I think it was a Michael Einer scored that try right on the whistle, pretty much. I mean, they were gone. Mm. I think too, the English, we was Scotland, Hastings missing their penalty out in front. Which would have put the English away over, and I think it was Paris. You just don't know. I mean, all these games, all these results are just, they just hang in the balance. And I think, you know, we've obviously got it pretty right over the last couple of World Cups, but before then, I mean, you know, these tournaments, they can be anyone's.
They certainly can. So let me take you back again to before the All Blacks were a part of your life, and club rugby was still a massive deal in Auckland. And the reason I ask that is because now you deal with club rugby in a very different sense, post to you deal with the big British clubs, the French clubs, the New Zealand franchises. But, I mean, you cut your teeth both at schoolboy level in First 15 in Auckland at Sacred, and then across to Ponsonby, which was a powerhouse club. Is there a part of you in some way that laments the demise of club rugby as a community centre, as the hub of a Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, of course. I look back at you know, what it provided myself and my friends, and just the fun, you know, just the fun element of it all. You know, playing, go training on a Tuesday night, the Thursday night, a couple of beers after training, you know, down for a bit of footy, and then you know, hanging around the club, and you know, it might be a social that night, and all these kind of things, and they were a chocker, and you know, you'd have Maris playing Ponsonby, and you'd have a big crowd, and it was a big part of the community. But I guess, mate, you know, it's just like everything else. The game's evolved, and you know, I feel sorry for the clubs. You know, I know that they're all struggling like hell to stay afloat and find their place. So from, you know, from that point of view, I guess, you know, I'm sad for the current guys, that they, I guess, in a lot of cases, don't get to really see any of that, because you know, a lot of them are pretty much going straight from school, straight into these academies, and you know, into reasonably professional environments straight off the bat. Yeah. So you know, it's just the way it is, and of course, there's other benefits to being a rugby player or being a top rugby player these days that weren't there then. But certainly, that fun element, I think they're certainly missing out.
Do you think it's important, though, that even in this professional environment which we find ourselves, and all of us who have anything to do with our game can see that it's a business, and we know that and we accept that, as all professional sports are. Do you think it's still important for these guys to remember the fun, the joy of playing the game with their mates?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, as much as they possibly can. It's a grind if you're getting out of bed, going off the training, you know, and then making the sacrifices that you have to make, you know, throughout the week or whatever, without trying to remember that there should be a fun element to this. And I think the guys do. You know, I certainly, I would be very happy being a professional rugby player in today's environment. Don't worry about that. I think if you're going off thinking that you're going to a job and you're not enjoying it, well, you're probably doing the wrong job. You know, it shouldn't be, because the travel, you know, just the camaraderie with a bunch of like-minded guys and everything else that come with it. It's not a bad job to be in.
No, exactly right. It sounds good. We haven't even touched on the rugby league sojourn, mate. Did you enjoy playing rugby league as much as you played rugby, or did you try not to ever compare the two?
Well, it's a question I get asked like all the time, and you know, I guess I kind of come across as I'm sitting on the fence, but I'm not really. I love my time in rugby league, and if I'm asked to compare the two, you know, it's just really difficult. And, you know, I guess my best years were probably, you know, as a player, when I was probably at my kind of physical peak and everything else, were actually, you know, while I was playing rugby league. So, look, it was great, mate. And I, you know, going to England, I had 4.5 years at Leeds, and that was fantastic. I got to do some pretty cool things, a couple of Challenge Cup finals at Wembley, and you know, playing with some pretty amazing players, like, you know, your Ellery Hanleys and Gary Schofields, and, you know, all those kind of guys. But, you know, I guess if I had one regret in my league career, it was probably that I didn't go to Australia a little bit earlier, because I really loved it over there, playing in there. Well, you know, it was the NRL comp, as it is today. And So I was at I was part of a pretty special team at Manly, and you know, we had a couple of, you know, we won premiership in my first year, and we kind of bummed it in the second year. But it was just great, mate, and just, you know, the just the competitiveness of that competition, and you know, the type of players that you were playing with was just fantastic. I really enjoyed it. It's a good experience.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a lot of fun, but yeah, you certainly take your hits in that sport. There's no hiding.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. But it's funny. I mean, if you're talking to any of the rugby league players, I'll tell you, well, man, I wouldn't want to be on the bottom of any of those rocks.
Well, that's right. Not in your time, anyway, Postie. There was a bit.
No, that's right.
There was a few straight boots at training. That was enough.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I guess like anything, your body becomes kind of adapt to what you're doing, and you know, I mean, certainly being a centre in rugby league is a little bit different to being a prop in rugby league. Yeah. When it comes to that collision.
Exactly.
But and certainly, mate, I look at rugby union these days and just the way that defensive lines are set and everything that goes in there, and you know, there's certainly no difference as far as the physicality that I can see.
No, exactly right. And which brings us full circle, Postie, and back to Esportif and what you do currently. And I guess, on a serious note, we know that New Zealand rugby's in generally in a rather invidious position here. It's a passionate rugby nation. It's number one rugby nation in the world by ranking. It still supplies so many of the best players and coaches. But ultimately, as I mentioned earlier, we're in a professional environment. So there must be a lot of soul searching for you guys in terms of understanding your duty to New Zealand rugby, but also your overriding duty to the players you represent. How do you balance your respect for the New Zealand game with the job you have to do, the duty you have to do for your players?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and it's something that obviously, you know, we need to be thinking about the whole time. And I guess, you know, I guess I can really kind of take you through the process as far as, you know, when a young guy, well, you know, not so young, hopefully, as far as rugby is, decide to make these decisions. And you know, really, you know, we sit down with the guys at least twice during the year for like a official reviews of where they're currently at. I mean, like, you know, we're obviously in contact with them the whole time, but to really kind of work out, you know, where they're at their current time, where they're wanting to go. And of course, as they start to progress, you know, the overseas question comes into the fray as well. And really, man, it's you know, we've always made it really clear that, and I guess, you know, being able to speak from my own experiences, I think it's really important that these guys, they achieve as much as they possibly can and are absolutely satisfied with what they've done in the country here before they decide to take that next step. Mm-hmm. So, you know, no one wants to be looking back, you know, as a 40-year-old going, well, you know, if I'd have stuck around and done this, and I would have done, you know, and I could have done that. So that's kind of paramount. I mean, it's, they've got to feel comfortable that taking that next step is, you know, their time is right. But even then, I mean, you know, I guess a lot of the time what we're having to also balance with that is, you know, you come to a point where, you know, maybe that next step is just a little bit too far. As far as, you know, whether it's, you know, becoming an international player or you know, like a minor team player, being able to kind of progress into Super Rugby. So getting that timing's kind of vital as well, as far as a player's commercial value and you know, to the international markets. So just kind of balancing all these is, I guess, that's the act, you know.
Yeah.
And be able to get these guys to a place where they're comfortable, that they want to move, they're ready to take the family off for a new experience, and in some cases, you know, that could be also, you know, from a commercial point of view, mean a whole lot more to them and their families as well. So
yeah,
it's just getting that right, you know, it's getting that right, and you know, the last thing any of us in the office want to do is see an All-Black team weakened because of, you know, careless actions by ourselves. It's just, you know, no one wants that. So trying to get their rights paramount.
Yeah, and I guess, but that's the PR war as well, isn't it? Because we read these stories all the time, and I'm sure you've read headlines and columns and articles and planted stories where you think to yourself, we're not the bad guys here. Is it an antagonistic relationship, or do you try to manage that as much as you can?
I mean, the relationship with New Zealand Rugby Front, I mean, for the majority of time is good, but I mean, of course, you know, we're coming from different positions, mm. as far as, you know, ultimately our client are our players. Mm. You know, our aim is to do, you know, what's best for them, and you know, that might not always be, you know, in line with what New Zealand is thinking. I mean, yeah. obviously, you know, for New Zealand rugby, it's important that they have as many of the top players playing in the country as they can, and, you know, and they fight tooth and nail to keep the guys here, as they should, mm. you know. So look, I mean, there's going to be times where there's crossover, but, you know, I think, you know, New Zealand rugby is kind of at a point now where, you know, they understand the environment and what these guys are having to, the decisions that these young guys are having to make. Mm. And ultimately, you know, it's when it comes to the commercial aspect, well, it's really hard for them to compete with, you know, some of these French offers or Japanese offers, and they realise that. And I think where we've probably got to get to is, you know, some flexibility in allowing these guys to kind of, you know, not in all cases, but in certain cases, maybe go off and do what they're doing and then come back if we can, you know, if they can pull them back. And that, you know, we saw that with Matt Todd this year. And, you know, possibly I think we're probably going to see a little bit more of that type of operating. And wholesale, I'd be dead against. I think it's a good policy that New Zealand have, that, you know, if you're New Zealand based, you pick for the All Blacks. If you're off playing in Europe, well, you know, you're kind of foregoing all that.
Yep.
And, you know, I think as long as they can hold on to that, I think it's really important, because I think, you know, All Black teams are the product of our rugby environment here in New Zealand. I've got no doubt about that. Not the other way around. Mm. And but it's just going to get harder and harder. So I think just having that flexibility is going to be important.
Well, mate, I know you're going to be at the pointy end of whatever happens in the coming year or 2 years, and we wish you all the best, mate. But it's been great to chat to you, and I know the challenges will continue, both for New Zealand rugby and for our agents all around the world, as we see the changes in this game. But Postie, thanks for joining us for In Conversation today, mate, and we'll catch up again during the year.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, mate.
Okay.
Craig Innes joining us on In Conversation, a series of podcasts as we wait for the return of the short ball on rugbypass.com.